Imagine saying to your best friend, "You look awful in that. You've really let yourself go. And by the way, look at how horrible your house is and how utterly useless you are at your job." You just wouldn't, would you? But we say all kinds of unkind stuff to ourselves, don't we? If, like us, you have a Nina nitpicker or a Camilla critic and you want to tell her to do one, this one's for you. It's called From Critic to Cheerleader: How to Banish Your Unkind Inner Voice. Carolyn, do you remember when you were small? Well, I don't know about you, but I had this totally childlike capacity to believe anything was possible. And for me, my thing was being Wonder Woman. Don't know if you remember in the 80s. I don't know if you quite, yeah. I think she was Linda Carter was the actress. Oh, she was just everything. And I totally believed I was Wonder Woman. In fact, my dad made me a Wonder Woman outfit. I absolutely adored it.
I have to say, I think my dad believed in Wonder Woman. I
Maybe.
don't know about yours, but like Wonder Woman wasn't watched just for mine and my sister's benefit. I just want to say that.
Maybe that's why my dad made me this amazing Wonder Woman outfit. It was for like a fancy dress thing we were doing at school. It was like a competition. Oh, I absolutely adored it. But you know, so I don't know whether, like, for you and people listening as well, whether you imagine you were a superhero or you believed you were invisible or that you were scoring the winning goal in the World Cup final. We just had this like childlike capacity to believe, and then life just threw a ton of lemons at us, and then suddenly all the things that you believe were possible start to become impossible, and you get critical in a voice, don't you? What about you?
I always my analogy actually, I've nowhere near as glamorous as like superheroes and stuff. I always feel that it's I use the analogy of sheep, in as much as when they're lambs, like if you ever see lambs running and jumping and bouncing along in a field, and it's just that absolute just joy at its most raw, isn't it? And they do that, and you see them, and you're like, oh, and it just fills you with this like happiness because, like you say, it's kind of boundless energy. And then they turn into sheep, which, I mean, if a sheep falls over, it can't even get itself back up, can it? Let's be
No,
honest,
that's
right?
true.
So
Yeah.
when they turn into adults, they sort of roll onto their backs, and then they have to be helped, haven't they, to stand back up again. And I kind of think that's what happens to us in the process of going from being children to being adults, that we sort of come these kind of solid lumps with kind of a leg at each corner, I guess. But it's, you know, so for me, it's maybe a bit less Wonder Woman, but I know exactly what you mean. You know, I think when we're kids, we're like have that boundless belief. And then we kind of turn into sheep and we plod along.
Yeah, because we just all this stuff gets thrown at us in life, whether that is things we hear or we see or we experience. I mean, you know, I developed, so I have two characters now that I try and tame, who are my inner voices and inner critic. So there's Nina Nitpicker, who is like the bully in the school playground, and she never has anything nice to say. And if I ever, you know, things that I want to do, but I'm a bit worried or anxious about, and then maybe it doesn't quite go to plan. She goes, tut, 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 with that waggy thing. I told you you couldn't do that. I told you, you know, who do you think you are? You know, she does all of that stuff. And then I've got Camilla Critic. And Camilla's the critic on what I look like, my appearance and things. And she'll say things like, "Well, look at the state of you in that." You know? And as I've hit that period of midlife where perimenopause and hormones make it very difficult for me to lose weight, like I could lose the weight if I wanted to in my 20s or even my 30s, it's all like around my middle and it's just feel dreadful. and I'm staring in the mirror looking at, you know, these jowls, and oh my gosh, I don't know, I'm just going to say it, but I'm forever with my tweezer picking hairs out of my chin now that just suddenly from nowhere appear. And if you're a younger audience, you know, and this hasn't hit you yet, yeah. I know every type of tweezer now and which ones are the best ones to get. You know, and you know, I'll be driving along looking in the, like, you know, the rear view, and suddenly there's a bit of sunlight and I'm thinking, how about that?
Something, yeah, and also as well, it's like they come from nowhere, like you say, and like it's like surely that must have taken months for that to grow, but why wasn't it there yesterday and today it is?
And literally I've just sat there at home putting my makeup on and plucking my chin thinking they're all there, they've all gone, and then I get in the car and then this is a really long wiry hair that appears from nowhere. Anyway,
yeah. Never Camilla. Been like your tweezers. That's the moral of that story.
What hope is this? Sorry,
well, I tell you what hope there is, because I watched a reel on Instagram by Davina McCall. And as you know, I love Davina. I know she's not everybody's cup of tea, and some people go like, oh, it's all right for her because she's really skinny. But you know, we are what we are. But I love Davina McCall, and she did an Insta post on exactly that a couple of months ago, where she was ranting about where these wiry hairs come from suddenly during menopause. And I honestly thought, God bless you for being so honest. And also for making us sort of all feel better, because I thought, wow, if it's happening to Davina, then do you know what? I feel suddenly like a ton better, because not that I'd wish it on her, but I happen to think she is a very attractive woman. And I do really look up to her, especially around what she's done on menopause. And she was honest enough to go on Instagram and talk about the wiry hairs that she was plucking out of her face.
Yeah, and they're not just on your chin, are they, either, sometimes? You know, sprouting in loads of places. But anyway, maybe that's too much information. I told you, I think on one of the other episodes, that I've been told I'm an oversharer. And, you know, so, but I don't care, because I think, you know, we have, so many of us have this inner critic that shows up in lots of different ways, whether that is in your work life or in your home life, your professional life, how you just feel about yourself. And I think for me, it's looked different and over different decades.
Yeah.
And usually for me, I get these massive waves of either Nina or Camilla or both of them. For me, it's milestone birthdays seem to do it. Whenever there's a zero after the number, or I'm heading for that, I just go crazy, feel lost, like in my 30s. I think Camilla was about comparing me with everybody else. So comparing, where was I in my career at that point? I should be further on in my career, or, you know, around about that point, friends have been getting married and having kids, and, you know, so, and what house have they got? And, you know, they've got this, like, perfect looking family and I don't have kids. And then at 40 it was, I should feel more confident than I do now, and I should be further on in my career, and I should, all the shoulds, you talk about shoulds a lot, don't you?
Yeah.
And I should be earning more, and I should, you know. But then I got to 49, in my 49th year, with hormones everywhere, and oh my goodness, for the first time I realized what this thing, this term called midlife crisis actually was, because I always thought it was, oh, it's one of those things that these poor baldy men go through when they want a, you know, a sports car or whatever. But my goodness, as I was approaching that big milestone birthday, my critics were going mad, and I discovered something else actually. And this sounds, I don't know, is it conceited, is it vain, but again, it was more to do with what I look like and this, I think, beauty paradox that hit me when I was approaching 50. So approaching 50, what did I start to get through the letterbox? I started to get Michael Parkinson's pamphlets where they all, the people on them just don't look like me, the over 50s lifeline.
Yes.
Wearing beige, looking like they're from the Werther's original outfit adverts. And I'm like, but I don't look like that.
No, you don't identify with it, do you? And I think one of the great things is that actually some of those stereotypes in terms of the media are shifting around those things. But you're right. You start thinking. I mean, yeah. I would have
you
taken
been getting
that.
Them because you're younger than me. Have you been getting Michael Parkinson?
Yeah. Well, to be honest, I want to take that free pen that he's offering. I want to use it to stab him. To be really honest. Sorry, I'm not condoning anybody doing
no
that.
Violence, no violence.
And Michael Parkinson, he's a very lovely man. But yeah, it's that. Yeah, exactly. Because you're like, seriously?
I know. I don't look like that. But this paradox thing then around. You know, for some women, it's so I know some women who have been really criticised for going grey. Mm. You know, they've wanted to embrace their grey hair. And there was a woman that I was know who said, you know, and she really suits it, and she looks amazing. But another woman came up to her and said, "I think you should colour your hair. It makes you look old." You know, I was just like, "What?"
Yeah.
So on the one hand, you've got some of these messages also. This is this paradox thing, I think, as well. Age gracefully, you know, the jowls, as I'm staring in the mirror at the jowls and the saggy skin and all of that are signs of wisdom, your experience, it what matters inside that counts. And at the same time, my Facebook and social media feed is saying, how to get the body of a 20-year-old, and here's all the anti-wrinkle cream, and you know, and honestly, I felt really lost, really, really lost, you know, and I've got to, you know, luckily enough, half a century, but then I think half a century, oh my gosh, I'm so old, and what have I achieved in my life? And do you know, it was probably my 49th year. Probably the worst year I've ever had for feeling like that. So I don't know about you. This inner critic that, you know, from inner critic to cheerleader, this episode is about. How is yours shown up? Or don't you have one?
Oh, I've had a much worse. That's part of the reason we're talking about it, isn't it? Of actually trying to get that under control. But oh my God. Absolutely. And you know, for me, because obviously in my parlance I would just call it your inner twat. You know, it's the twat that you are to you, about you. So that's what I refer to mine as. Although I'm like listening to you, I'm thinking I really kind of need to give her a name. But a lot of mine was really focused. You know, I identify with a lot of the stuff that you said, but I think a lot of mine was my narrative has always been about being lonely and unloved. That has been my narrative. And I know now the words and phrases, you know, this is part of the way that I've turned it, you know, more towards the cheerleader is I know the words and phrases that I use when that's happening. And I know that they're all phrases around being lonely and unloved. They're all those kind of phrases, but you're right, you know, absolutely the ones about appearance and, you know, and I would be, a little bit because it's the kind of family environment that I've grown up in. You know, my family are brilliant and great and lovely, but that kind of self-deprecating humor is very much at the root of sort of the things that we laugh about, and we laugh about ourselves. And actually it is that thing. I tell you what really highlighted it for me was when my sister had her little girl, and I think Charlotte was about four. The first time that she actually said, we were playing a game, and I think she was about four, and she said, "Well, I'm just hopeless at this." And you know, when you hear your own voice spoken back at you, you know, and not just me, you know, my mum, my sister, whatever, because we just go, "Oh, ha, 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 I'm hopeless at sport," or "Ha, ha, you know, I'm hopeless at." And she was four. And I tell you what, it was like a knife through my heart. And then it happened again, which in fairness wasn't, I think, so much about us as a family. Once she went to school, and I think again, then at that point, she was, I don't know, about seven, eight, something like that, where she came out with the words, "I hate my body." And that really, really brought me up short, because I thought, yeah, we all do a bit of that. You know, my sister will say her ass is too big and, you know, all of that stuff. You know, I'd be doing that. I'm too pale and, you know, da-da-da-da-da and all of this stuff. And I think, you know, you and I've talked about it a lot before about this idea of role modelling, is that actually, you know, when that stuff gets played back to you, yeah, that I think really made me think, do you know what, I need to be kinder and a better version of myself to myself, because this little girl who is beautiful and perfect is picking these things up.
And that's what happens, isn't it? And it's quite a nice segue that into kind of the B in Broads on, you know, there's an accompanying guide to this with some tips. And we like to use our Broads acronym to give you tips and techniques. I think I was saying, if we go back to right at the start of the episode, you know, when we're children, we have like a childlike capacity to believe anything is possible and all of those. And then when we then start to get influenced and we hear things and we're sponges, aren't we, as kids? So that's a perfect example of what you said about your niece, you know, at that age. And when I think about my lack of body confidence as well, I can trace that back to an event that happened, or a few of them actually, but one significant one, where I was probably about, again, 8 years old. They all seem to have happened, I think, for me. I mean, they do say something like between the ages of 4 and 7, you pick up on most of this stuff, really, and it starts forming your beliefs that, you know, you live your life by, really. But I remember we were on a little family holiday in Llandudno in Wales, and it was a really sunny day, and we'd gone to the beach, and I had a bikini on. So I was about 8 and I was dancing around, you know, like having some fun. And there was an old guy sitting in a deck chair, didn't know, on the beach. And he pointed and he said, "Look at your belly wobble up." You know, and I was like, that was the first time anybody had really, or that I'd noticed or picked up on, an adult referring to my body. And I was so mortified and embarrassed. And from that point on, I really started to get really body conscious, and whilst I wasn't a skinny child, when I think about it, I wasn't a fat child, but that's what I heard.
Yeah.
That, and then in our family, we've all got pretty good appetites, and you know, the whole thing about, and you know, eat it all up and clear your plate, and I did that, and I wasn't fussy. And then I remember also at school, one of my friend's parents would give us a lift now and again, a lift home from school now and again. And she would say to me, "You need to sit in the front because you're bigger and you'll squash the other girls in the back." Oh, and so these things, you know, it was like, gosh, I'm fat. Mm. And my kids used to say, because kids can be really cruel, can't they, as well? I used to get called Concord and Wurzel Gummidge on account of my nose. And so not only had I had these things where we talked about, I think in a previous episode, where, you know, I felt like I was a failure at certain things because of things that happened. Now, with now fat and ugly, and I was 8 years old, and then I would listen to, you know, there could always be conversations with adults, with the women, aunties, my mom or whatever. They're always talking about the latest diet.
Oh, 100%. Always on a diet. My mom was on a diet.
Talking about how much weight they'd lost, or this diet was better or whatever. And I remember, like, I was probably around about between 8, 9, 10, whatever, thinking, I need to go on a diet. I want to go on a diet. Mum, can I go on a diet? Mm. You know, and so we end up then believing things that aren't true. And so I think for the cheerleader needs to believe the truth, which is the story, which is just that event or something that you heard that formed something so strongly that becomes the critic that you don't question, like the ones that you were talking about, I don't feel loved or not good enough to fit, you know, for those. And actually to catch the critic.
Yeah, it is always about like I said, is noticing. Observation is the greatest thing we can do in the first instance. Noticing when we do this stuff, where it turns up, who sometimes is the person that prompts that in us as well. You know, who are those people that we hang around with? Or we consume their stuff on social media or whatever it is that then make us feel worse. But actually just that noticing in the first place is absolutely the first hurdle to improving stuff. Because, you know, it is that thing. I mean, for me, and you know, another seminal moment, and like, again, like you say, you know, it's always when you're really young, isn't it? So my mum was a hairdresser. She was really busy, and it was what, I don't know, the late 1970s. So I had a page boy haircut. Like most girls or kids at that moment in time, and it was easy. So I was never allowed to grow my hair long, because to be honest, that was like, that would take putting up plaiting maintenance that my mum didn't have time for, and hairdressing was her job. So she didn't want to do it, like particularly with us, right? And I remember going, and it was some kind of fair raffle, kind of something like that, and I won on some thing that you know, some stall that I went to, and I was able to pick from a range of prizes, and I picked a ring, and the person on the stall went, "Well, oh, that's an unusual choice for a boy." So that massively stuck with me. I was so upset and humiliated. And you're right, it is that thing that sticks with you. Because even up until a few years ago, I was like, well, you know, I've got the body of a prepubescent boy, you know, because I'm skinny, and, you know, all of that stuff. And it just fed all of that view of myself. And it's just insane, you know, because actually, as we've talked about in another episode, you know that I had premature ovarian insufficiency, which meant I never had the right hormones, and all of that stuff was what led to my menopause starting when I was 19. So yeah, I kind of didn't have the right hormones, and you know, so therefore, you know, I am just skinny, and I'm actually sort of an unusual blend of my parents' genes, to be honest. But you know, but that was my thing, is that I was just boy-like, and it took me a long time to sort of step into actually even being comfortable with my femininity and thinking that I was even feminine.
I want to pick up on something that you said about you know, we talk about catch a critic, but also drowning out the noise, really. That's kind of Dean Broads that you were saying, like, be careful who it is that might be that says those sorts of things that might trigger us, or that we listen to. And I think there's kind of three ways that you can do this, like drowning out that noise. I think there's lots of different types of noise. So this is the inner voice noise, the, you know, the Nina nitpicker, the Camilla critic, whoever, you know, your inner twat that you say, and being able to re-script what, you know, catch what they're saying to you, re-script it, tell them the truth, believe, you know, actually the truth as well. But I think it's drowning out those around us as well, as you said, that maybe naysayers, that maybe just, you know, there are some people who they either just don't think about before they speak, and they don't probably mean it in a nasty way. And then there are others who, you know, I think literally will say, well, I'll just say what I think. And it's like, well, you've been a bit cruel there, really, aren't you? But I think this is the whole point, and also why we're really passionate about the broad room as well, is you can, you know, you might choose still to keep some of these people in your life because maybe they're family members and all friends that you love dearly. However, you can balance that circle of people that you surround yourself with to drown out some of that noise, really. And that's what we're doing in the broad room, isn't it? To have a space for women that we can be emotionally intelligent in and support one another. But I think that other thing, you know, you were talking about the social media stuff as well, to drown out the noise, because when I think about it, it was bad enough growing up when I grew up in the 80s or whatever, with the things that I just heard people around me say. But now we've got this whole social media noise on all these different platforms that mean we compare ourselves, we get fed stuff on our feed through ads that are targeted to us, through content that's targeted. And so for me, I've been really purposeful about curating my feed, because the algorithms just like to show you stuff that, you know, it's viral, and some of that isn't pleasant. And therefore, before you even start the day, if you're anybody, anything like me with social media, then you're checking into like two or three accounts and scrolling, and that's already set you up for the day in not a very nice way if all of that content is negative. So for me, I purposely curate and then engage with positive content on social media, because the algorithm will respond to, oh, you like this, so I'll show you more of that kind of stuff, which is positive. Yeah. And that helps you kind of drown stuff out. So it's just a little tip or a tactic I have there. If you're like me, I spend a lot of time on social media for lots of different reasons, but being able to curate your content, I think, is really important.
Yeah, and I think that comes for people as well. So I did that actually, I think it was during lockdown. Somebody who I'm friends with on Facebook, and it is somebody that I actually know, somebody that I know from back when I grew up, actually, where I grew up. And so, you know, you become friends on Facebook because, you know, you have that shared history. Obviously, there's some people on Facebook who you're actually not friends with, but her entire narrative during lockdown was so angry, actually, is how I describe it. It was negative, but it was negative in an angry way. And she was clearly frightened and, you know, had a family to be concerned about. But it was so angry that in the end, I mean, and this is some of the great stuff I think now that you can do on things like Facebook, is that I didn't have to unfriend her. I just muted any notifications around, because in the end I thought, I just can't see this anymore, because it's so, I mean, firstly because her views were very different to mine about what was going on, but also, you know, just that negative, I thought, I just don't need that. This situation is hard enough without like listening to all of that. So I just muted that. So, you know, if I want to go and see a content, then I can seek it out, but it wasn't like popping up for me anymore. But I didn't have to go the whole hog of unfriending her in a way that she would potentially then notice, which I think in and of itself would have felt quite hard to do. And it's, you know, it's absolutely that. And you're right, you know, the stuff that pops up all the time can be so damaging. When you just, you know, again, it's all of that comparison. And but also I think the other thing to talk about on the back of lockdown is, and I don't remember any specific statistics, but apparently because we've spent so much time on Zoom and therefore so much more time looking at ourselves, like on the camera, on Zoom, Teams, you know, whatever the platform is during lockdown, but apparently the demand for cosmetic surgical procedures has gone up massively.
I saw that too.
We're just looking at ourselves on the screen all the time, and it's made people really self-conscious about how they look. And, you know, post-pandemic, there's been a huge surge, apparently, in cosmetic procedures.
Yeah, and also, you know, the Zoom camera, you'll notice if this is on YouTube, mine's just freezing all the time. And when it freezes, gosh, it's like the worst version of your face when it freezes, isn't it? No, do I really look like that? And it does, and you're right, because you're looking at yourself, and they're not always the best cameras, are they? And isn't it funny how, you know, in certain, like in my downstairs loo, I actually look all right in the mirror. And then I go out to the places and you've got these really, really bright lights. I'm like, is that what I look like? And I'm gone, there's another hair chin. So yeah.
But it's right, because it's me and my PT say this at the gym, because actually the gym that I go to is really quite dark and like dimly lit, but then with it's got these massive circular mirrors on one wall, but they're kind of like backlit, you know, they've got orange lighting, which is the kind of logo around the back. But there's something about those mirrors that honestly, you look amazing. They are, I think, specifically designed to make you look muscular. I don't know what it is that they do to them, because if I knew what they did to them, I'd get one in my home. But yeah, we sort of laugh, because it's like, if you ever want to feel good, you just need to stand in front of one of those mirrors.
Maybe that's such clever marketing, isn't it? Because to get you to keep coming back.
You're doing
whereas,
great.
You know, like, I always think that, just going off on a tangent, a lot of the clothes shops have it so wrong because, you know, you're crammed in some changing room looking awful trying something on and you're right on top of the mirror. But actually, if they did what your gym does, they'd sell so many more clothes.
Just
get it all wrong, don't they?
Yeah.
So, I mean, in terms of then, we've talked a lot about, you know, our kind of inner critics, how they've shown up. In terms of techniques that you've used that have helped you go from critic to cheerleader, what sort of things have you done?
Well, do you know, one of the things I did actually really recently, so as you know, when I recently relaunched my Midlife Mistress website, and I did a photo shoot for that website. And I kind of knew what I wanted to do and what I wanted to achieve. And my photographer, who I've used before, is amazing. He's a really great guy. You know, he's really kind of up for whatever it is you want to do and whatever. You know, he's very much not of the, you know, corporate headshot kind of photographer. So I knew what I wanted to do. And I knew that I wanted to kind of really step out in front of the camera and be unapologetically me, which, like you say, which is what the Broadroom is all about. But absolutely, on the morning of it, you then have that crisis, don't you, of confidence where I'm like, what the F in hell do I think I'm doing? You know, I'm a woman in my late 40s. You know, what the hell is this all about? Because I'm now going to be photographed, like I say, and I don't like having my photograph taken. Well, I don't mind having my photograph taken. I just don't want to see the photographs. That's the difference. And I actually stood there on that morning. It's two things, actually. One is, I think we've talked before, a bit like the Wonder Woman stuff, is like the superhero pose, which I was watching something on telly the other day, actually, and they were doing the superhero pose in a, it was in a drama program to go, actually, this is a really great way to build you, like make yourself feel confident. So firstly, I did the sort of superhero pose, which always that does make you feel stronger. But actually the conversation I had with myself is, today is the youngest you will ever be again.
I love that.
And do you know what? Like, you will look back in 10 years' time and think, wow, I really wished I still looked like that. So stop comparing yourself to 10 years ago and actually remember that 10 years from now, you'll think, go me. You know, I'm so glad I did that because that's a great reminder and I still wish I looked like that. So it was having a proper conversation with myself that went, do you know what? Just go out there and smash it because today is the youngest you will ever be.
I love that because I actually do that. And it's something that I do say to people much younger than me that have, you know, struggles over their appearance and things like that. I kind of laugh with them and say, do you know what? In 10 years' time, and you look back on photos, you're going to think, what on earth was I worrying about when your belly's even bigger than it is now? You know, laughing. But yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, for me, I like to do little, so I have a little technique with boxes. So these could be imaginary boxes or real boxes. And I have two boxes. So one is the box that I'm going to, you imagine all the nasty words and phrases that your critic says about you. You're not good enough and you're not this and whatever. Write them. Imagine you've got a book, a plain book. And you write them in, you know, calligraphy or whatever. And then you rip those pages out of the book and you screw them up and you put them really firmly in the box. And then you think, okay, I don't want this box in my space anymore. So what am I going to do with it? I might bury it in the ground. I might throw it off a cliff. I might put it on a cloud and let it float away. So it's no longer in my space. But the second box is the really beautiful box. So imagine the most beautiful looking box. And in that box, in the most beautiful handwriting, you've written, you know, I am enough. Maybe it's our slogan for the Broadroom. I am woman. I am me. I am enough. And that's already in the box. And every day you're going to open the beautiful box and you're going to pull that stuff out and you're going to see it in all its glory. And that is you. And I absolutely love doing that exercise and I strengthen it. Because this is all about repetition and neural patterns, the things we've heard, we've repeated so much we believe. So actually you can craft that new belief, and so if you do it in a physical sense, and I like to create you know, like a speak kindly to yourself ritual with that as well. So to anchor it, you know, maybe make a ritual out of it, like light a scented candle, smell some essential oil as you're doing it, make a real ritual. All of that starts to anchor into your brain and your body. And that's what you become, because I think you become what you believe.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more, because I, in fact, I've on the wall above me is where I still stick post-it notes and stuff, and they're not there at the moment actually, because I've recently had the wall repainted. But I had two sets of post-it notes for a long time, and one was when I was not me. So they were all the negative things that I am when I'm not me. So like anxious and depressed and tired and low energy and all of those things, critical. And I had those on post-its. And then I had another set that sat under me, which was, you know, energized and lit up and funny and passionate and all the things that I am when I'm in my best possible state. And those used to really help me, because when I got into that, a bit like your Nina Nitpicker and Camilla Critic, you know, all that sort of stuff, I would look up sometimes and think, I'm sitting in not me. And that's not, you know, that's not good, because the words were literally there. And I thought, yeah, I'm anxious, I'm stressed, I'm depressed, I'm, you know, all those, well, I was ticking all of those ones off. And then I thought, right, okay, let's look across at the other list and go, right, well, I want to be passionate, funny, energized, smart, problem solving, you know, all those things that sit in the me list when I'm at my best. And it allowed me to physically kind of switch one to the other, because I could see them. They were right in front of me. And like I said, just above my screen on my laptop sitting here. And it was great. And it was almost like flicking a switch. You know, I just flick over from one to the other.
I love that, because I love how you say, you know, when I'm not feeling my best, when I'm not my best, I'm sitting in this space. But actually, let me just shift. I can just physically shift and look at that other stuff. I really love that. I mean, sometimes, though, it's not quite so easy, depending on how strong we have or how non-conscious we are about some of this critical stuff as well. And it can also be quite, we can also get quite fearful about being that person deep inside us that, you know, we kind of want to be and we know we are, but having to, but doing that requires us to create a shift, and it requires us to do things and take action. And many of us don't do that because, you know, what if it, so the critic comes up again, what if I do that and it doesn't work out, or it's going to feel uncomfortable and we get anxious about that. And that is natural. That is natural. And I think one of the things we talk about in the guide for this is, how do you release that fear? And some of the things I get really annoyed about sometimes are, you know, you see these motivational quotes, feel the fear and do it anyway. I mean, sometimes that works. And I think it depends on what that thing is. Maybe it's not that deeply rooted, but if you've ever tried to feel the fear and then couldn't do it anyway, and you felt bad, there's a reason for it. You know, fear is a good thing in many respects. We have to be fearful of things because it helps protect us and save our life. The problem is that when it comes to some of the thoughts that we have that are deeply embedded within the brain and the body, the body's treating it in the same way, and the brain's treating it in the same way, as if, you know, there's threat to life, danger to life. And so fear is physical, because fear creates that cascade of neurochemistry, you know, the stress hormones and things. So, and you're going to feel it in your body. So I think if you've got anything very deep rooted that is stopping you, releasing the fear through thoughts and words is probably not going to, you know, don't expect a huge shift. However, being connected to your body and understanding where the fear lives in the body and how you can release that through using the body and the brain is massively powerful to get shifts. And we'll do more of that in the boardroom at the live events that we're doing as well. A process that I used to do that's called neurosculpting. So I just wanted to say that in case people feel like, well, okay, I'll just write some stickers or Joe your box and these words and you know, sometimes it can help depending on what that thing is that we're feeling we want to overcome as the critic. But sometimes it's very deep rooted into our body. So feeling a sense of safety in the body and learning how to feel safe in the body is massively important to make a substantial shift.
Yeah, I think that's so important. And I think the same thing goes for the cheerleader. You know, you don't have to literally be waving your pom-poms like, you know, every 3 seconds. And yeah, you know, because none of us exist in that state all of the time. You know, we don't constantly be upbeat and happy. You know, I think we've talked about happiness before, that, you know, it's a very, you know, transient emotion. But I think, you know, the thing with the cheerleader, you know, okay, so if you can't sort of get up, wave your pom-poms and go, yeah, I'm amazing, I'm badass, you know, like, we just don't do that all the time, do we? But actually, for me, then that cheerleader bit can become about those really incremental things like consistency, like that you talk about. Like, for example, you know, I write my gratitude journal every night before I go to bed. And again, you'll hear all these things about write down 10 things that you're grateful for. I don't put any limits on it. If I write one thing, I've still written my gratitude journal. If I write 20 things, I've written my gratitude journal. You know, it just depends on the day and what I can remember and how tired I am and you know, all of that stuff. But actually just those consistently being positive about stuff, that's the cheerleader. You know, she doesn't, like I said, have to be out there and, you know, doing somersaults and whatever, but actually consistently doing positive stuff is enough of a cheerleader to keep that cheerleader going and remind you of all the good stuff that you've got going on in your life. And I think, again, it's about that balance and not putting yourself under huge pressure to constantly be upbeat or, you know, never be negative. It's that stuff happens, but doing the small incremental things that just always are tipping you over into the positive, I think is really important.
Yeah, and I want to say something about the positive thing as well. It for human beings as well is incredibly difficult to be positive, and in fact positivity is a luxury because it isn't hardwired into us. What's hardwired is negativity bias to keep us safe. So we have to really work at being positive. So when people just say, well-meaning people, they've said it to me, we just have to think positively. It's like, don't you think I am trying? And it doesn't work like that. So I think what you're describing are, you know, you're doing the work to move to be positive by doing things like your gratitude journal. Or for me, it's also, you know, how can I speak kindly to myself today? So what are the things that I can say that I'm actually good at? And this is not about being conceited or vain, because some of us might feel icky about that, you know, well, I'm good at this, or look what I've done today, and you know, or even at work as well. It's not about that. When you repeat those things, which are the truth, because you'll find some evidence, you have to work hard at it, go and find it, maybe, if you're always in a headspace that is very critical on yourself. But repeating that actually builds self-esteem, confidence, and because that's a neural pattern. So all we are as human beings is navigating everyday life through neural patterns. And neural patterns are default because they're easy and efficient for the brain. Because the brain's lazy like that. It doesn't want to keep relearning things. So with that in mind, you may as well create a neural pattern that's a really supportive one, because your brain's just going to believe it. So rather than keep repeating the whole Nina Nitpicker or the Camilla Critic stuff, just pick something to say about yourself, for God's sake, every day that, you know, makes you feel amazing, and say it out loud.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing for me, you know, my final point is that the thing that I've really noticed is that I slip into that negative stuff, or, you know, like I said, onto the not me side of my post-its, when I'm tired. And I think that we underestimate the power of sleep. You know, like, you all know this in terms of like the brain and the body's recovery and all of that kind of stuff. Now, I do understand that if there's women that are of our kind of age that are watching or listening, that about, you know, you speak about perimenopause and menopause, and I know that it's a period in a woman's life where for some the sleep and exhaustion, you know, trouble sleeping, insomnia can be a huge problem for perimenopausal women. You know, it, for others, it can be a problem for other reasons throughout their life. So I do know that in itself, so me sitting here and going, oh, just get more sleep, is not necessarily the easy route for some women. However, at least keeping to a consistent sleep routine, even if you can't actually manage to sleep if you're in bed, but just getting that rest, letting the brain and the body rest, being consistent with that routine, it massively helpful in terms of stopping you slipping into that negativity. Because when you're tired, it becomes harder to keep that positivity and to keep up those habits that are positive.
It does. And it could be that, you know, whatever stage of life you're at, you know, maybe it's you're not getting very much sleep because you're a new mum and you're working, and all you're working long hours, and the brain gets tired. We're using our prefrontal cortex a lot, and that's the bit that does all the higher executive functioning things to navigate every day. So whether that is, you know, all the organisation that you're doing, the travel that you do, the thinking stuff that you're doing, that is energy consumptive. And so it gets exhausted really, really quickly. And then the default becomes the part of the brain that is fast, automatic and efficient, which activates probably for some of us these negative thought patterns as well at the same time. So being able to rest and to sleep. And if you don't manage to get lots and lots of sleep, even during the day, not even sleep, just ways of using neuroplasticity exercises to bring resources away from, I call it my Frankenstein brain, that part of the brain that slips into that negative thought pattern, but back to your Einstein genius, which is your prefrontal cortex. You know, you can do those in seconds, you know, seconds and minutes, and the recovery and productivity you will have from that is amazing. Not time for this episode to talk about that, but yes. Come join us inside the boardroom at some of the events that we're doing, because I just absolutely love using our neuroplastic gift that we have in our brains to help us navigate.
Can't wait for some of that. I am woman. I am me. I am enough.
You've been listening to the Broadroom podcast. If you're our kind of broad and you'd like to take a seat in the boardroom, download our free guide full of tips. You'll find it in the show notes.